listening to Journeys on Revolution Radio on freedomslips.com and simulcast with wolfspiritradio.com. Join JP, your tour guide today, on this journey of discovery from the known to the unknown in search of enlightenment, knowledge, and truth. Welcome to Journeys with JP, and tonight is Journeys with JP and JWR, with Rebecca herself, back from Friday. We kind of left it hanging there, and I hope that we didn't have, you were left hanging too much in silence there, just as we connected. So, welcome to Journeys. It is March, the almost over. What is today? The 31st. This is almost over. Wow, we're nearly on April 1st tomorrow. 2014. This is Journeys with JP and Rebecca, and tonight we're going to be continuing our journey down, 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 down into the darkness beneath the House of the Sorcerers. Let's talk about that in a little while, though, because we kind of massage people's heads and things so they can be flexible enough to go down the corridors, and then strong enough to run away just if we need to run down corridors. Because to me, this is like a kind of Doctor Who kind of scene. I don't know. Have you ever seen Doctor Who?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. My favorite. I mean, since I was a kid, I've been watching Doctor Who, you know. And he investigates things like this. It's really interesting. You know, you can find shows that have all of these things, and we're talking about the abduction of children. There's this... Okay. Let's fill everybody in. Rebecca, would you like to talk about... Well, a little bit, you know, just a little bit wound back before that little clip that I sent you earlier, which was the closing minutes of the last show that we did. You know what you want to say. Just take a deep breath, and the floor is yours. The air is okay. Yours. The plastic megaphone is yours.
First of all, thank you for having me on tonight.
Always been.
It's always fun to be with you, seriously. One of the things that I wanted to share with people that may not watch or listen, rather, to the Friday night show, My Journeys with Rebecca show, is you were on there with me. And it was actually kind of a rollover from the week before show when we had Thomas on. And Dale and Dave, yourself and myself, we were all going into the Bigfoot thing, because Thomas Hughes is a real proponent of Bigfoot. And then, of course, that conversation took us into other realms, shall we say, which was really kind of where we picked up on last Friday night's show. And you and I spoke very briefly before the show last Friday night about keeping it real. I said, you know, you were talking to me about Karen Hughes. And I said, wow, yeah, you know, I listened to it and listened to some of her videos. And you were sharing a story, and I shared a little bit of a story. And so we started talking about sensitivity and stuff on the show last Friday night, because that's really what I wanted to get into, was talking about sensitivity not just from an emotional standpoint, but from a physical understanding for people, what that really means, and from a 3D perspective as well as getting into the metaphysical side. Of course, then we went down the rabbit hole, you know, after that. Then we were getting real with it. Not that sensitivity isn't real, but it was like there was no disconnect from that conversation to where we went next, right? In my opinion, it just kind of one thing flowed into another, and we were talking about world events, and we were talking about metaphysical things and quantum things, et cetera, and so forth. And of course, one thing leads you to another. We were talking about Cliff High was brought up, and we were making comments, and I said something about the Vatican. And then that's when the Karen Hughes thing came in. We started talking about Karen Hughes again. There was this little 15-minute clip. And honestly, JP, I can't remember where I heard the clip from. And she's on air, and she's talking to this guy. I don't even remember the name of the radio show, to tell you the truth.
I can actually play the clip if you're interested.
Yeah, please, go right ahead. Oh, that, you know, that would really help for people to listen to what this woman is talking about.
Okay, so then, so give it an intro, because I've got to spend a couple of minutes finding where I left it, because I know I left it somewhere.
Okay.
I've got a really good filing system.
You did find the 15-minute one, though, right?
Yeah. It was just like Karen on her thing. So, just introduce it, and I'll drop it on the player. Hang on.
Yeah, sure. Let me know when you get it up there. And, you know, so here's the deal. Karen Hughes is a person who worked in the finance field, big finance, world finance. So she was very well informed. She's very well hooked up. She, you know, was part of the whole financial community. And she decided that she was going to kind of turn whistleblower in a sense on the whole financial structure, not only here in the United States, but across the globe, what goes on behind the scenes. Really, it was all about the money. She's just a money person. So when you listen to any of her shows up until this most recent one, she's very knowledgeable. And I can't say that on some of the clips that I've listened to Karen, and I said this on Friday night, again, for those who didn't hear the show, is that I don't necessarily agree with everything, and I don't mean I disagree with what she witnessed, but I don't know that she has all the information. She will talk about different things in regards to different pieces of the financial structure in the world, and it's not really her repertoire. It's not one of those things that she's really well versed in, but she makes an educated guess, and some of those educated guesses, in my opinion, are not correct. That doesn't make it right or wrong. That's just the way that I feel about it. And at this point, neither one of us, Karen nor myself, have been proven right or wrong in regards to the statements that she has made in previous times. Not that I know her personally, because I do not. I've never spoken with a woman. So she's in here, and this guy is asking very good questions, by the way, in my opinion. I think he was asking extraordinarily good questions of her. And she was answering, and I noticed that during this clip that this woman that I had heard previously on different radio shows seemed to have a different demeanor about her. She seemed to be a little different, not as kind of dry. And she dropped this bombshell at the very end of the closing of this radio show that she was on, and I was so blown away, because it was exactly something that I had actually had visions of many, many, many years ago, and I spoke about that on Friday night, and I'll get into that vision here after the clip, and JP can kind of fill you in too on you know, some of the things that I had said, because this particular vision happened, I don't know, 20, 25 years ago at least. You know, well before I knew much of anything. But in here, she's talking about the Vatican, which is always it was one of my first, what I call spontaneous remote viewing experiences was that I was taken to the Vatican. That's where I showed up at, was inside the Vatican. And, I don't know much about it except my explorations of it. and, you know, what it kind of signifies in the financial as well as the controlling factor. But it's not like an area of study or expertise of mine. How are we doing on that clip there? You found it yet?
Okay, yeah, I've got the the 18-minute interview, yeah? And it's somewhere towards the end.
Yeah, yep. I would say you'd probably want to play at least a good 7 to 10 minutes of it, just so people get an idea, maybe. Because I know that there was a couple of minutes after that, and he was still asking her questions. So I'd kind of like to see if people could get an idea of what she's kind of like. So however long you want to play it, this is your show, honey.
Okay, well, let's...
One's agreement.
Okay, so she's talking about the USA, the...
Don't criticize me. Look at what I'm saying. See if I have any information in the...
I'm just thinking...
Agenda. It's saying, am I for real? Yeah, I'm for real. Now, saying, am I for real?
Okay.
Yeah, I'm for real. Now... am I doing a good enough job on the information that I'm getting from other whistleblowers? Sometimes I'm doing a planet that was Nibiru. I got really snookered. And what was really interesting there, I learned a lot, was I tried to correct the information. And every time I corrected the information, it was taken down from the Internet. So... I learned that you have to be really a little careful about information and vetting it.
Well, certainly practicing discernment in everything we do is something that must be practiced, especially when we're handed documentation that can make certain claims, and of course vetting the documents themselves. So back to the topic at hand, and the global cabal of puppet masters who are pulling the strings of the international elite and the banksters. I had mentioned the Illuminati and the Masons, and I mentioned the Order of the Garter and these super secret organizations. But you take it all back to the Vatican. You take it all right back to those this species of people. If I could provide a little bit of a historical perspective for a moment, when the Illuminati was supposedly disbanded, some people believe that it just didn't disappear. It went underground, and it simply spread itself out. Would you say that the same is happening with this species of you know, I would say, you say they're not human, but for lack of better words, I'll say they're... a species of humans, do you think that these individuals have peppered themselves through some of these organizations as well?
What I know is...
Or is it isolated simply to the Vatican?
What I know is that when you get to be a 33rd degree Mason and the Black Pope and also the archaeologists, they all know that Moses was Akhenaten. And if you know that, then you know that Akhenaten had this huge skull, and his daughters had this huge skull. So I'm going to presume that they probably also know that there are individuals, and they're not humans. They do not have the same kind of DNA that we do. And I can tell you what I know about them. They're very mathematical. Their average intelligence is about 150, and they do not have creativity. They're not emotional. And the other thing is that in the process of working with all of these whistleblowers, I've learned a lot about the strengths of Homo sapiens, because we're not giving each other salaries. We're not giving each other honors. We're not giving each other anything other than additional hard work. But we also know who we're working for. We're working for all of humanity.
So I have to ask this question because some of the viewers who are watching right now are going, they're talking about another species with an elongated skull. You mentioned the high intelligence, the lack of creativity, and it's going to be hard for people to grasp that reality. And, of course, everyone has to do their own homework to discover these things. But given your whistleblower status with the World Bank, do you think that by promoting or discussing these types of theories hurts your credibility and all in the minds of some of the people who may have first heard of you through the whistleblower status at the World Bank?
I'll tell you what, I've gotten a fair amount of feedback like that. And I'll tell you what I say to these people. I say that it has been an incredible experience to have made it this far. And the number one thing that I've learned in that process is to trust my own intuition, because that has really served me very well. And my intuition is telling me that this is the time to tell people this.
Well, Karen, thanks for taking the time. I wanted to ask you some tough questions and have you here to discuss some of these hard facts, and I thank you for taking the time to sit down with me today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Gary Franchi signing off for the Next News Network. That was Karen Hudas. She's a World Bank whistleblower. Karen, what's the website?
My website is www.kahudes.net, but just Google me and you'll find all kinds of stuff.
All right, you heard it here. Google Karen Hudas. You'll find out more. As always, research the facts for yourself. Discover.
Blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. And actually what you did is, in part of that is, I think you got it too fast, too forward, too far into it, because it didn't, her statement about she had met the being itself.
Oh, right. But she didn't talk about this being particularly. She was talking about these beings she called the Coneheads.
Right. But she had talked about, in that same one, she had talked about meeting it. She's seen
right.
it herself.
The big thing.
The big thing.
Oh, sure. Right.
Not
oh, so
the big
this
thing.
Is the
not
first
the
Friday
beast.
Of the month.
All right. But
like the representative of the other species, she said, that is actually running this planet.
Yeah. Who are these Capensis fellows? Homo Capensis.
That's it.
Now, okay, so let's go back to Doctor Who, because all of these sci-fi shows, they give a little bit of the truth, and however telepathically or psychically, or he's just told stuff, the writers get some stuff in there. And okay, so a few years ago, now let me just try and remember when it was. It's at least 6 years ago now, so it was 2006, 7, something like that. There was a Doctor Who spin-off series called Torchwood, and the Torchwood had its own spin-off series, which was a mini-series that was broadcast day after day. It was a really odd thing. They broadcast it every day. Normally it's a weekly episode. They broadcast 5 episodes in one go, and you can get the torrent. Those of you who know about torrents, ask people, those of you who don't know who torrents are, ask people how to make a torrent or how to get a torrent, and you can download the whole series called Children of Earth by Torchwood, okay? So, don't bother, because we're talking right at the end of it, we see the creature that is behind it all, telepathically talking through all the children in the world, saying, we want 10% of your children. And, it got to the point when they had all the children in the bus. And it turns out that they were connecting with this being via a radio frequency, a particular frequency. I can't remember what it was, like 467 or something like that. I can't remember. please, the nerd army in the chat room, please, can anybody remember the frequency? I don't think it was 432. I'm not sure if it was 432, but I don't think it was 432. But anyway, they got this frequency, and this was the frequency that they were connecting with this being, and this being downloaded plans to build an environment for it. And it comes into the, sort of beams down into this environment, and you see, this child goes into it, and the creature kind of jacks into it, and they realize that what it is actually the creature is using the child to get high on. It's not like feeding on it, it's just using it for a pleasure. And that it was a, you know, it wasn't necessary. You know, it wasn't a matter of survival that they wanted our children. It was just like, you know, cocaine or something like that. So we're introduced to some very interesting concept there, you know, alien view of human, not as, oh, how wonderful the humans are, or, but more like, how tasty these things are. Oh, or, oh, what a buzz I got off that one. Which turns us into, you know, it turns us into a piece of crack, essentially.
Ooh, wow.
How creepy is that? You know,
that's about as creepy as you can get, JP.
Okay, because, like, this is getting too real. All right? So that was the thing called Children of Earth. So what they did is they sent this frequency, and it turns out to be Captain Jack's only human son. You know, he turns up at this person's house, and the girlfriend that he hasn't seen forever since he got the girl pregnant comes back, you know, asks to see his son, takes his son away, and then sacrifices himself, his son, to the monster. That's a real point of shame. It's like, why would they put that in a children's, you know, it's not a children's sci-fi, it's grown-up sci-fi, but why would they, that's an interesting concept, the sacrifice of the child to, you know, that is what we have been talking about, being Katie Galanti and I, we're talking about, the externalization of satanic ritual, and one of the rituals is you sacrifice the thing that you love, and then we realize that that goes all the way back to good old Abraham, who was all too willing to sacrifice Isaac to this dude.
That's right.
Isn't that interesting? So
it's
all going all the way back. And so there's Doctor Who. So we have this character, Captain Jack, who's also immortal, turns into the face of Bo eventually and comes back in time and everything's weird. Anyway, so it turns out that this creature beams its way down into the earth, and is wanting, the sacrifice of children. And we were talking last week and on Friday, and like, it's like, what does this thing want? And it's like it's demanding sacrifice because it's trying to get what it wants, isn't it?
You know, and I've thought a lot about that since we were on the show Friday, believe it or not, because you asked me about that towards the end of the show. What does it want? What's it doing there?
Yeah.
And can it leave? Can it, you know, what's it doing? We call it the beast, by the way, for everyone that's, because I don't know what it is. I really don't. And, you know, if you think about this thing as being kind of like, is, as it were, the controller over some of the humans. Please remember now, this does not include everybody, JP. Does not include everybody. But it has included, you know, and I think there's something here that kind of mixes in with it, doesn't cross it. It kind of mixes in with it when we talk about bloodlines. So I think maybe there's something specific with the bloodlines in this thing that was kind of the information I was getting. I don't have a real clear picture of all of it. It is so, been so contaminated with lies and deception, right? That it's hard for me to find the point of origin, the truth, what I call the truth strings, right? When I look at this thing. But there's something there about bloodlines and how it can, and it could be a frequency thing. You know, you're big into the frequency thing. So it could be a frequency thing that it taps into.
456.
Mm-hmm. Could be.
That was the, come back in the chat room. 456 was the frequency.
Ah.
Interesting.
So every one of us, even though we're individuals, we still respond to different frequencies, and different frequencies will do different things to different people, right? So if this thing has a frequency hold, so to speak, on the bloodline, maybe you know, that's a really ancient story then. Now we've got something that's really ancient. You know, cause that goes back to, you know, I don't know how many, could be hundreds of thousands of years as far as we know. You know, we don't know how long this thing's here. My sense is, though, it hasn't always been here. I mean, I think it was kind of left here as a sense, or maybe it volunteered. I'm not quite sure. You did ask me how it felt, and it's not happy. I will tell you, it's not happy, but it's doing, and okay, I'm being instructed to say, and that's a relevant term, what is happy, right? This thing does not, the beast does not have these type of emotions of elation or joy. You know, that's really a human experience. It truly is. The elation, the joy, the sadness, all of the emotions, to the extent and level of which we experience them or can experience them, right? So when we're talking about non-human entities, generally speaking, I haven't run across any yet, but there could be. You know, nothing's impossible, right? But generally speaking, non-human entities are not emotionally equipped near like the human being is. I'm not sure if it's just not developed, or they've developed it out of them, or they've grown it out of them, or it's never existed within them, within their own, you know, structure, right? We don't know. We don't know enough about that kind of stuff on how these things work in order to truly say that one way or another, in my opinion. So as I look at this thing, its idea here is to keep those that will answer the call. Remember those tentacles that I said I showed you, that I said I had seen?
Yes.
And, you know, they don't, and I said that on Friday Night Show, it's not like everybody can be controlled by it, because they can't. And I don't know if it's getting tired, if it's getting old, if it just is, or if it just doesn't care, but it may not seem like this to a lot of people, but its hold is loosening. Its tentacles are loosening its grip even on those that responded to the frequency of its call, its information, its instruction, whatever it is that's keeping it here. So what does it feed off of? I don't know. I don't know if it's like, I don't know if it's a feeding thing. If it's just here because its presence keeps, you know, control, manipulation, deceit alive on this planet. When you stop and think about the Vatican and everything that goes on with it, it's not an accident that that's where it is, right? It has to be somewhere where it is, can be nurtured, whatever that nurturing looks like to that creature, right? In other words, it's not going to place itself somewhere on this planet that is not sustainable for it. I mean, that's
somewhere that supports its requirements, like I was saying the other day, like I was trying to say like a vivarium, you know, like where you keep lizards, you give them a bit of rock and some stuff to, and the right kind of light, you know, the right kind of environment, and it's kind of separate from our environment. We are able to survive in a different, you know, all sorts of different environments because we've got clothes and things like that. When you give, in conversation with Eva last night, Eva Moore, we were discussing this and we thought we'd give it a name. So, and it's a kind of amoeba. So I called it Albert.
Albert.
Albert the amoeba. And in a way, we were able to contact it in a compassionate way. And rather than approaching it with fear, because remember you said exactly in the show, you approach it with curiosity and it doesn't spark it because it doesn't recognize it as food.
Whatever it needs, right?
It's not predatory to it. It's neutral to it. Doesn't care.
It doesn't seem it as a threat.
Yeah, it's not threatening, right? And it's not food. So
or whatever.
It's just something floating around. It doesn't matter.
Inconsequential.
Inconsequential field. Yeah. This is a, it's like, Douglas Adams came across the thing, the somebody else's problem field. There's a kind of electromagnetic field that can be generated that makes something appear to be somebody else's problem so you don't worry about it. Mm-hmm. It's an invincibility cloak. It's somebody else's problem field. So essentially, you clothe yourself in the somebody else's problem field, and you looked at this creature and you saw what? Where can you describe the room, the surroundings?
Just dank and dark, almost cave-like. It really had a very fetid smell to it. But now see, here's something that I thought about when I was paying attention to whatever, you know, incoming pieces of information came in. Is that a true and accurate description? Or is that smell a mechanism that it uses to mask what's really there? You understand what I'm saying? It could be like a
kind of ink. Octopus is ink.
Yeah, but it's fake. But that's what the human would smell, would be this fetid air. Is it really fetid air? Is it really putrid air? You know, if you can get past the stink and the, you know, the fetidness and all of that other stuff, is that what's really on the other side? But it takes a, do you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah. It's just like a again, it's a somebody else's problem field, a that stinks too much field. You know, I ain't going there. That's horrible. You know, it's a repulsive field.
And it's almost like a big blob.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's how it feels to me, like a big blob.
Mm.
Big, mushy, ushy blob with intelligence, very little mobility. But I also feel like that it can also shapeshift, but it's not something that it does very often.
Mm.
I don't know if it's because it expends a lot of energy or if that's, if it's a difficult task, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. It's like they can do it, but it's only like in very rare circumstances are they able to do it.
Right. So there's this chamber, presumably deep underground. Is it round?
It is.
Is it square? Rectangular.
It appears to be more round in shape. It's not perfectly cylinder. It's not a perfect shape.
So more like a cave.
More like a cave.
Okay. Like a natural formation. And that there is a kind of man-made platform within this, yeah? A horizontal area.
Yeah.
Yeah?
That's what I sense from it.
Mm-hmm. Because that's what you'd need. You know, that's what you'd expect if people found a cave and it was below the Vatican. It was, you know, it would be constructed very carefully and it would have a man-made floor, presumably with some kind of safety device in it, maybe a moat around it, something to stop.
Well, no. That's the thing that I seen was that there was a moat. But then, you know, let's take a look at this. Many people can imagine going down a highway and on either side of the highway there is a mountainous area, right?
Mm-hmm.
But the highway itself is flat. So if you imagine coming outside of one of those mountainous areas, you're coming out of one kind of a alleyway or a cave or a tunnel or something, and you hit this flat area. This flat area is actually the moat.
Mm-hmm.
But then over on the other side of the moat is a ledge that goes as far as the eye can see. Now, it's not a straight line by any means. It's very curvy, and your eyes can only see so much unless you move around inside of this kind of open cavern. I mean, it's huge,
mm-hmm.
right? This open cavern down there.
Okay, so size of a football stadium?
Oh, at least.
Okay, so a very big cavern,
yes.
And there's water that is being circulated through it.
Yes, it's moving water. It's not stagnant water.
Is it volcanic? Is that why it smells so bad?
That does not feel warm to me at all.
Not warm. So it's
not
cold.
Warm.
It's a cold, dank.
It's damp.
Yeah, and sulfur?
Hmm. Not sure about that one.
Hmm. Okay.
Not sure about that one.
All right, so huge cave. flat floor, moat that prevents you from going across except at certain points where there are log, pillars that you have to step on in the right order, otherwise they all duck under the water and nyang by something or some, you know, piranhas or something hungry because
something is there.
Yeah.
Whether, I don't know what that something is, I never did find out and I'm very grateful.
All right, so you're not able, so it's as if you're walking on the ground, is that right? That you're not able to kind of float above this thing?
No.
No, so your vision is purely as somebody, so could it be that you were embodying, you were sort of looking through somebody's eyes?
No.
No.
Let me share with you what I see as I'm looking across this moat. There's like a ledge that goes all the way around where this other mountainous-like area, cavernous-like area goes up, right?
Yep.
And you can see the opening of this other, of where the beast, or as you call it, Albert, resides. And you can see very low illumination coming from there. So you know there's something there. You can hear it. You can sense it. You can feel it. You know there's something inside of that cave. It's not like there's nothing there. There's a cave there and you can see, or an opening to a cavern of some sort. And it is all man-made on the floors at least, and I believe that this has been very carefully designed down there. Maybe possibly for the placement of this being.
Okay. So the being himself, Albert. Mm-hmm. The room is huge, size of a football stadium today.
At least.
And Albert is about 40 feet high.
Oh, gosh.
That's the estimate that Stu Weil was talking about.
You know, I'm trying to place myself and trying to do this mathematically, scientifically in my mind, because I was never inside of that cavern because I couldn't get across the moat. And so I'm trying to do that. So I would say that's fairly close, give or take, right? I think that may be fairly close of a description.
Okay. So when you say you could go into this room and this being could reach you by one of its extendable pod things.
Nope, that's not what I said.
No? Mm-mm. How, what's its kind of radius of influence, would you say?
It's all done, there's no...
Oh, it's psychic.
Yes. There's no moving parts to it that I ever ascertained.
Okay.
You know, no, the tentacles are a metaphor for the talking head field. So we have to get back to that talking head field.
Well, yeah. But this, I see that this is the same thing in different modes from different angles.
Right.
And it's fascinating. And, you know, I don't think you need to do this alone. Essentially, you know, somebody else out there who's listening, somebody will have a feeling about this and think, ah, this is what I do. I've dreamed about this. This is what I do when I'm dreaming. You know, people have jobs when they're dreaming. I think they're just getting a rest. Anyway.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
right?
Nice time, yeah.
So, you know, I'm looking across at this thing, and it, for the lack of a better way of saying it, it sees me, right? It knows I'm there. But again, I'm looking at this all from a curiosity level. I'm not looking at this of, out of fear or frustration or eagerness or, there was none of those types of emotional triggers at all. I'm looking at this like I'm looking at these posts that I have to get across to get to the other side, right? I'm like trying to figure it out. Okay, so this is a puzzle. And I know that if I take that these things will drop and I probably won't exist if I have to do this, you know, if I don't do it right. so there was no, it wasn't like, oh my God, if I don't get this right, I'm going to die. It's just like, okay, it's like just anything else. It was a very strange mindset to be in. But that was how I was told I was supposed to approach this area, was in order to not draw attention to myself on a psychic level at all, is that I had to remain in a neutral space. And the neutral space is not having any emotions attached to anything that you see. That is simply observation. And then when you leave there, then you can come back out of it and then, you know, do whatever you need to do and go, oh my God, what was that?
You have to keep a steady mind and a steady heart.
You do. And it's been training.
So, all right. So let me just link this in with a lot of things that I've seen, right? Number one, okay. there's this film called The Golden Child. In fact, Mike links it in one of the Rev Radio jingles here. He's, you know, you are the one who will find the children or something like that. That's from The Golden Child. And it's Eddie Murphy playing this kind of street guy who actually finds kids. And this, Buddha, little Buddha, I mean, he's 4 years old. He knows he's a reincarnate. He's completely sitting there, completely calm and meditating and, you know, just nothing is perturbing his inner calm, right? He is totally the dude, but he's 4 years old, and he's kidnapped by a character played by Charles Dance, you know, basically a tall, white, you know, kind of fella, who is, you know, Mr. Evil, and this child is the Buddha of compassion, and he mustn't be lost. But anyway, during this period, just think... Eddie Murphy has to go and get a special tool, and he has to be pure of heart. And he finds his way, and he goes through one of these places that has got these pillars that drop down to a nothingness. You know, it's not water this time, it's just pillars. But we've seen this motif in lots of sort of the dark parts of ancient temples, these things occur. And it's... You know, there's probably a trigger mechanism and probably a reset mechanism eventually, but for the time being that you're trying to cross the moat, if you make the mistake, boom, you're gone, you know? So, yes.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And there was a question that somebody asked in the chat room, if I may go ahead and read this question.
Go ahead, Mugga.
All right, let me get me little reading spectacles back on. In reference to the entity under the Vatican, does the name Kart Gigi, pronounced Kart Gar, have any meaning to you? Well, when I first read this, I have to tell you, is that the name or what you're trying to pronounce there is very close to, language that this thing, may emote, and what they're telling me is that it's a part of a longer name, perhaps, or phrase. Understanding that their language is not constructed with the same rules that we would have, so phrase seems more appropriate. And the phrase could be an identifier of a region, an age, a title, that we could equate it to. That's what I'm hearing. I hope that helps a little bit. I hope that didn't confuse you even more.
Yeah.
Thank you for the question. Did you, that make sense to you?
Yeah. Anyway, so let's call him Albert, for the moment.
Albert's easier, yes.
And it was really strange because I was going to type it into Facebook and I thought, and I typed it in. I spelled it like A-A-L-B-U-R-T. What a weird way of spelling it. But you know how spells and, you know, and energy. And I tell you, I typed that in, and I looked at it, and it vibes so bad.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. It was a little too weird and a little too scary looking to be the friendly kind of happy little Albert. You know, we want a little friendly being, because we need to approach it with compassion. You know, we need to be friends. I know, and I do have to apologize, and on Friday, I said, let's nail the bugger and zap it with a beam. I agree, I was less than compassionate. And so we took a different approach. I was speaking, because I've been talking about this with everybody, you know. And I was talking with this with Eva Moore last night. And we took a compassionate approach to it. And something seems to have happened. Something happened last night. And we looked at how it was feeling and what it wanted to do. And somehow it kind of flipped its way inside out and dispersed. Now, I don't know if that really happened or if it was just like what we like to have happened. But something happened and it was a release. And I felt released this morning. So I don't know what anybody's feeling, whether that has actually panned out or whether, you know, it's just like I've allayed my own guilt about the thing, you know. All right, so I can let go now.
Well, so let's take a look at how your metaphysical actions can have an effect in the physical world, okay? If this thing, if this thing is like what Karen Hudes, I think is how she breaks pronounce. I always pronounce it Hudes. It's not. It's Hudes.
I'd say Hudes. Yeah.
Yeah. If this thing is actually, pardon me, controlling those who we have called the cabal here or on this planet, you know, the human counterparts, if you will, and the control mechanism of, you know, this monetary slavery that most of humanity has found themselves in. If this actually, the work that you and Eva did, if it has shifted or changed anything at all, what you will see over the next few months is a change, perhaps even on a global scale of the monetary or the cabal. There will be some kind of positive change that this thing's frequency not be as connected, or that the that it chose to break the connection. Maybe it's, you know, just it's time for it to go. Whatever the case may be, you should be able to see signs of the physical, in the physical world, that the work that you did do something. And not in a negative way, but in a positive way. Even if it's just something small, you should be able to see that.
Yeah.
If the work that you did was true and accurate for that being.
I've given myself a little benchmark, which is, it's a story that if I see something like this, all right, the story would go something like, you would see a military deployment that would be humanitarian, truly humanitarian, and not just this weird United Nations stepping in thing, but there was a disaster and that the military were deployed to help people, and that the Jesuits were involved. And it would be a successful operation. It would be a really positive thing, and people would go, wow. Because it would just work, and there wouldn't be politicians involved, it wouldn't be charities involved, it would just be a deployment, boom, there you go. Fixed. Sorted.
Well,
that's what I want to say.
So I'm gonna take this into yet another realm, but it connects, right? Astrologically speaking, in the middle of this month coming up in April, we have the Grand Cross showing up. We have Pluto is in retrograde. We have an eclipse before, an eclipse after this Grand Cross in the same month. This is April. You know, I've talked about it. We are sitting in a different place in this solar system than we ever have. The whole universe, the whole solar system has moved, and the influences of the energetics, planetary lineups, you're going to see some tremendous changes on this planet. We're seeing earthquakes everywhere, which is usually a cursor to the energetics shifting and changing. It's not necessarily about death, doom, and destruction. It's simply about that's the effect that energetics may have on this planet is that the planet itself is trying to find its own harmony or balance, as it were, right? So here we have this huge astrological events coming up in April that can also free the human from slavery, from this, 50,000 years plus, in my opinion, of slavery on this planet, which means that the work that you and Eva and everybody else has been doing on this being, Albert, has allowed him to be released, and we'll find out if that's the case. We'll find out if the cabal, some people choose to call them the Illuminati, but they're really not the Illuminati. The Illuminati are really the enlightened ones, and the ones that came forward with the knowledge that's been subverted, and that's been the campaign, is to subvert the Illuminati, the true Illuminati, into being dark evil ones, when in fact they're the ones that brought the knowledge and the esoteric information to this planet. But that's a whole nother story, see? So here we go. Boy, these rabbit holes can just go everywhere, can't they?
Bunny.
It's like the Energizer.
More rabbit than Sainsbury's. So, yeah.
Anyway, we should see something more soon than later. Seriously, in regards to that. You know, I suspect, when I looked at this thing, that it actually is very ancient and old, and for me it felt tired. I can't imagine.
Yeah, fatigued and kind of resigned.
Yes, I can't imagine being without your own kind. I cannot imagine a race of beings, any of them, that their whole time was meant to be individualized and never make contact with another of like mind or kind. I can't, my mind doesn't wrap around what would be the point. What would be the point to create a race of beings, whether there's 5 of them or 50 billion of them? What would be the point to create, or they're created or born or whatever, and there only be one?
So lonely. So lonely.
What would be the point, though? Ask yourself that. What would be the point?
The only point that I could think is as a representative, like an ambassador. Now, we saw Babylon 5, and the Volons only had one ambassador, and he was like a light energy being, and presumably part of a collective consciousness, because he said, "We are all Kosh." You know, what's your name? Kosh. But the other guy was called Kosh. Yes, we are all Kosh. It was a collective consciousness. And it must be really, really difficult to be a singular being in a collective consciousness. You know, or a single being out of a collective consciousness. It's like being a drop of water separated from the ocean and knowing what it's missing. Having that level of consciousness. And my feeling about this creature, Albert, is that it had it's a single-celled creature. Yeah, but like my feeling is it's like a phage, like a white blood cell, which is a single-celled being that is patrolling your body, billions of them, patrolling your body. Like this in some way, but just on a different scale of things. And we know that the universe has this way of scaling itself. It's a fractal, so there's a big thing, and then there's a small thing that looks like the big thing, and it behaves like the big thing, and it is the next scale down. And we know that scale happens in quantum, so you don't get a kind of in-betweeny thing. You get like the 14-foot version, you get the 60-foot version, and you get a 6-foot version, you know? They come in certain sizes. One size fits all. Beings like that. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
You know, like you get the grasshopper and you get the locust. And what's that other one? There's another one which is like a tiny grasshopper. And they call it something different. But it's just a tiny grasshopper. And so we see on the planet these levels of insects, say. But we don't see 6-foot mantids. But in other parts of the galaxy, there are 6-foot mantids because the planet size is different.
Well, the environment is different, and the chemical makeup is different, and et cetera, and so forth.
So, poor Albert, is presumably from a super being, a massive collective consciousness being. Perhaps he's psychically in touch with it. Perhaps he psychically represents and siphons through himself the energy that he extracts from the human race. And whatever, and maybe more than the human race, maybe he extracts from the planet herself and is a major parasite in her. Tell us about that, Rebecca.
Well, yeah, a parasite would be a good thing, but I can tell you is one of the things that I shared with you on Friday night was that, I got 10,000 thoughts. Let me see if I can clear them here. Is that this particular entity being, has a job. We're talking in human terms about a non-human entity.
Yeah. But, I mean, it's a part of a mechanism, isn't it? It's like, actually Sean was talking about it. You know, what we see as a huge rock is actually a transistor on a massive scale, you know.
Right.
You know, so we see things from our perspective, but there's a much bigger picture going on. So, go on, I'm sorry.
Oh, no, that's okay. So this thing, Albert, had a job to do. And why he is there, I can't tell you. And I'll tell you the reason why I can't tell you is because of all the deception, all of the secrecy. And this has gone on for a long, long time because this thing, even though it has controlled a few of the... Oh, go ahead. We'll break.
Don't go away. We will be back in the dark, dank, huge underground cellar beneath the Vatican. How weird we can take you on a journey. Hope we're going to be able to take you home. You don't want to be stuck there or Diego Garcia? Oh, yeah. So lonely. So lonely. Yeah, poor little Albert. So lonely in his dark, 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 damp cave. Down there, under the Vatican. Poor little Albert. Shriveling, sad, tired, old. Wanting nothing but a nice bit of loving, and all people can do is fear him. Rebecca.
Yes.
Don't make me cry, huh?
Look, I want to clarify a few things here. Okay?
Yeah, go on.
Again, and I'm going to make this statement. We are talking about this thing in human terms. It is not human. It does not share the same kind of emotions, if any, like the human. What it does because it's kind of its job. It is one thing to fear it, and no one should fear it. It's more about understanding it. And I do appreciate the fact that you went at this thing with compassion. The thing, though, that I see with this, JP, is that does it even understand compassion as far as the human emotion is concerned? If somebody has no understanding of emotion and cannot sense that which you put out, with the exception of maybe fear or anger or, you know, some of those other, you know, kind of different types of emotions, certainly not aligned with the positive side. I don't know how much of it actually understands. I'm assuming, and I'm using that word, assume, I'm assuming that if you came at this thing with what you termed as compassion, that it may recognize it as a non-threat. And perhaps on some level, it too may have been curious enough to allow for whatever frequency that transmitted to, it might be a new frequency for it to have received. I don't know. I don't know what this thing needs. But like all entities, like all beings, all creatures that we don't understand, that we don't know, the human experience has been, our past behaviors have been, well, you know, I'm going to shoot it. I'm going to kill it, you know, because it's this, it's that. But if we actually came into an understanding of what it needed and perhaps give it what it needed without it being here to give that to it, then for me, that would seem to be a better solution than to go and kill it, right? Or, you know, to blow it to smithereens, whatever. It's kind of like getting back to the conversation that we all had when we were with Thomas and Dale and Dave and you and I.
Exactly, and it's coming round full circle, yeah.
Yeah, like, what, you know, what are they going to do if they find a Bigfoot? Well, the first thing you hear people go, well, I'm going to shoot it. And why would you do that? Why would you do that? That hunting killer mechanism that we have isn't really the natural state of a human, by the way. That is something that has been programmed into the human. And, you know, unfortunately, after so many millennia, it becomes part of the DNA. It doesn't mean that you can't change that, because you can. But I would say to people, let's not be in a hurry to go and just, you know, blow it up. And I certainly wouldn't be in a hurry either to run in there and say, oh, I love you, you're part of me, either. You know,
you can take compassion quite away, but not maybe all that way.
Right, right. And see, compassion, to me here, for some reason, doesn't seem to fit. It's more like understanding it. Understanding what it needs in order to understand what it needs, to me, is more of a compassionate thing than just the human expression of compassion. Because you still might not have the understanding of what it needs. Is that making sense?
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So where we got to is to feel it. You know, and I got to feel what its experience is. And, you know, one of the things that it was looking for energy, and it was looking for love energy. But you see, you can't take love. You see, love is given freely, but you can't take it off somebody. And there is, the alternative is to do what Crowley does, which is, or talked about. Crowley talked about it, you know, but all the bloodline have been doing it forever, which is you take the thing that is love, which is a child, and, you sacrifice its energy. You consume its energy in that way. We talked about it. This is what satanic rituals are all about. And it's all about that chi that can be extracted. And yeah, in a way, chi is love. And that's really all the beast wants. It just wants to be loved. And, you know, it sounds really, really cliched. And it's like, look at what the beast has done to everybody. But, you know, and all it wanted to do is receive love. No,
I don't think that was its original intent, was to seek love. I think its original intent, honestly, was to do its job.
Mm-hmm.
And for somebody to do its job in the mindset that this creature has, that is love, is because it's doing what it was told or asked or commanded or bred for or whatever. See, again, we're still using human terms for a non-human entity.
Mm.
So I'm not sure I understand what you're saying, but you're talking about human love. Does it have that kind of an understanding of human love? I don't know that it does. I will tell you is that, and I'm getting back to the point that I was making earlier with this thing, it would make no sense whatsoever to create one being like this and then to leave it in this space and do what it's doing. Its actions alone tell me that this was not necessarily a volunteer situation with this creature that you call Albert.
Right. And again, it comes back to a lot of these Doctor Who plots. This is interesting. It's about a, it's like an exchange. It's like a hostage. You know, you have him, we'll have one of yours.
Or it could have been an aftermath of this, of the wars.
Yeah.
Of the Galactic Wars.
And that he's a captured.
It could have been captured. It could also have been banished. It could have been a volunteer in as much as you either go do this or you do that. And it chose this instead of whatever the other choice was.
Well, it sounded like that choice that poor old, was it Preston Nichols? we need somebody to volunteer to go and cut those wires. I don't know where you're going to find one. Oh, yeah. Me.
Whoops, right, yeah, okay. There you go,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So this thing is very different. Its entity, its energetics, everything is different. And I can't get to the human aspect of it because there is nothing human about it. It doesn't function, feel, sense in the same way. It uses frequency. So it's more scientific. It's advanced to a certain degree because obviously it does not need audible sounds, although it does make some audible sounds in order to communicate like you and I do. It uses frequency to connect with those that it's supposed to have connected with. It's, again, it's just doing its job, right? And for whatever reason it's here, it may have been forgotten as well. It may, you know, what is time to something like that, right? We as humans measure time. But what is time to a thing like that? What does that mean? Does it feel like a minute to them? Does it feel like 10 million minutes to this thing? Does it feel like an eternity that it's been there? You see? But I will tell you, just like the alien we've talked about is called the construct. This is also part of the energetics that are breaking down around this planet, which we call the construct. Some people call it the matrix, right?
Ooh, could it be like a living hard drive for the construct? Or a CPU unit or some kind of technical position. It's in a position, isn't it? It does a thing because of its position, and it's in there because that's what it does. You know, it's like a navigator or this or that. You know, it does it. It's a function, but it's a living being as well.
Right. It's a job. It's a function. Maybe that's a better way of saying it. It has a function, and that's its function. And, you know, it sends out signals. Doesn't your CPU send out different signals based on the hardware and the
That's right. It has communication lines. It's got a bus.
And they all run off a different frequency because they all have a different job to do.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And it communicates on different levels because it's listening to what's going on the mouse and it's listening to what's going on the keyboard and it's listening to what's going on the web and, you know, through the network thing. So it's got all these different ports. So it will have different, that would be your, oh, hang on. So from the inside of this thing, oh, wow, yeah, we're getting it. Right, so from the inside of this thing, everything is kind of nice, clean, like a computer simulation is kind of a clean world, isn't it? But from the outside, like in the Matrix, it's more ugly than it is on the inside of the Matrix. You see?
Right.
So in the mind of this being, it's this perfect, beautiful thing. But in its reality, it's just kind of a big, ugly blob kind of thing.
Yeah, it doesn't have mirrors.
Yeah.
It
hasn't got a webcam.
It's no webcams, maybe mirrors.
It's like one of these, you know, these online dating things and that, like the, what's that called? The morbidly obese couple who have these avatars that are like little skinny, cute little things. And
they
meet together and realize that they've both been playing the same game and they're both morbidly obese but they're happy because they met on the mind and they didn't judge each other by their bodies. So.
Right.
Interesting. Anyway, meanwhile, back in the deep dark chamber. Is that coming across, or is that? Hang on, that's. I think this. The deep dark chamber.
There it is.
That was the Raven. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah.
Depends which side.
You got it now, babe.
Yeah. So, back in the deep dark chamber, we're talking about a chamber the size of an average football stadium, which is pretty large. You know, in terms, you're talking about like the stadium itself, yeah?
Yes.
Or the football field in the stadium.
No, I'm actually talking about the whole stadium.
Okay. And so, and there is like a moat around it that you have to cross using these columns, yes? But you have
Correct.
To be very stealthy. You have to, step on the correct column. And you
intuitive.
Don't know the correct column until
intuitive.
You're about to step on it. Yes, it's intuitive. You have to choose the correct column. Anyway, getting across to the, when, if you were to get across to the thing, if you knew the path, or if you had the correct intuitive tuning, and you got across to the inside section, how broad would you say the water was? You couldn't jump it.
Oh gosh, no, it's, let me try to, I'm trying to put it into feet. Probably at least a 4-lane highway wide.
4-lane highway, so that 8 lanes?
No, 4-way.
All right.
4 lanes.
4 lanes of, so,
sorry,
yeah.
4-lane highway.
4 lanes of a time, right, okay.
All right.
So, yeah. And so within that, once you were, one would be able to cross to the other side, there's some kind of platform or, you know, some floor.
A ledge.
A ledge?
It's a ledge. I mean, it's not like a precarious ledge where when you get there you have to worry about falling off of it.
Mm-hmm.
You call it a platform, but it's actually ground level, so you would just, from there you just walk into the cave. And it's probably, I don't know, 15 feet. From the side of the ledge to the inside opening. So it's a good, you know, there's a lot of room there.
Mm-hmm. Right. So then the cave opens out.
Yeah, it's a big opening there. Mm-hmm.
Right. And there he is. And to look at, can you see him?
He looks like a big blob.
Color?
It doesn't seem to be a static color, truthfully. It feels like it, because he's like, what's the word I want to use? It kind of undulates a little bit. Like,
like
a
sack of rats.
Like a blob would. A blob wouldn't just sit there, kind of like jello, you know?
It globulates.
Yeah, it kind of moves.
Yeah.
And when it's doing that, it's looks a lot like a swampy water color, has hues of browns and dirty browns, dirty greens, dirty golds. They're not pretty colors. They're dirty. They're muted. They're dark colors. Interestingly enough, he does have, 2 eyes. I don't know if I don't see ears. I don't see appendages. I don't see a nose. I see something that I think may be a mouth. I don't know. And his eyes are yellow. They're a bright yellow.
Yeah, the eyes of a predator.
And, but he kind of like, when he like is looking around,
mm-hmm.
you know, it's, the hues of this thing change a bit. Again, not a static color. It's not, you look at this blob and go, oh, he's brown, or he's green, or he's this kind of putrid yellow color, right? It's, they're all modeled together. All these colors are modeled together.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah, it's a, like a swampy looking thing, even though it's not a swamp that he lives in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he is a swamp. He's in a swamp.
He might be the swamp. Who do we know, right? In his world.
Yeah. So, but the thing is, why, his, what,
he takes something, he must give something. There must be some advantage to having this creature around.
Power.
Because
control.
He's got the power of forethought. Is he like the navigators in Dune, where they have the psychic forethought? They're able to see ahead in time, and so they use him for seeing ahead in time. Is he like an oracle?
You know, we would call him a controller.
A controller.
We would call him a controller because of the frequency he sends out and the people that respond to the frequency messages that he sends out and what they do. Again, we call him the cabal. The few that, you know, have kind of desecrated this planet with their control mechanisms.
Mm-hmm.
They send him, or he sends them, it would be, I guess, we would look at it as kind of like battle plans or schematics.
Uh-huh. Intelligence.
Yes,
intelligence downloads, yeah.
Yeah, so this is what, that's why you see so many factions that know what each other are doing. And, you know, that's his thing is, and you got under, and again, I have to be very clear. It's not like he says, well, I'm going to pit this one against that one. That's a human way of thinking about it.
Mm.
This is just what he does. He just sends out information, just subliminal information. And it triggers this DNA, right? And these people act on that frequency that's, you know, pulsating in their body. And, you know, the thought, those pulses become the thoughts, become the actions, and then we see the outcome, you know, in the human. So he's like a controller. He's an earth, interesting, he's an earthbound controller.
Earthbound controller.
Earthbound.
Yeah.
Bound to the earth.
Mm-hmm.
So he, alright, so that's an indication here as to why he's here. He was bound here. Interesting. I always pay attention to what they say. Pay attention.
Yeah.
We're telling you something here. You gotta pick up on it.
Yeah, well, when they say things, they say very specific words which have very specific meanings.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, we're talking about Rebecca's guides.
That's right.
When we talk about the in this sense, yes, entities under the Vatican. Robbie 9000 says the octopus. Now here's the thing. Yes, true power never allows us to see. Right. Okay. First of all, thank you very much, Briaros, for the correction. It was his grandson and not his own son, but his somehow he has a daughter that has a son that had a son and. Yeah, anyway, so that was a bad thing that Captain Jack had to do. But it had to balance, you know, they had to balance out the karma. And, anyway, the frequency was 456. It's interesting, it's like an inversion of 432. 456, and that was, like you're saying, is the frequency that they contact this being on. So perhaps somewhere, Albert has a frequency that people dial into, like a special radio, like a secret radio, that allows the people then to connect and become connected. Yeah.
Well, if you're walking the dark side.
Yeah.
If you're walking the dark side, whether you're bloodline or not, you know, by sheer intent, again, remember, you can change your physiology. You know, meditation has proved that. Just by taking deep breaths in and out, you can change your physiology, which means you're changing the signals and the frequencies within your body. So if you're thinking about, you know, if you're part of the dark side and you're meditating as an example, which really isn't the correct expression or terminology to be using, let's say your intention is to, you know, to become one of the cabal. You want to control and manipulate people. You want power, right? And greed and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Whatever it is, right? Then you can tap into that frequency. And once you figure out what that, road is, right, to get there, once you've got that mapped out, then you can reach it more than one time. And then eventually, you don't even have to read the map, you just are there, right? It's a repetitive action.
Mm.
So, but it starts out with the bloodline as the frequency that it sets itself into tapping into, which is really a very interesting thing, because we see a lot of these people that we had considered of the cabal, and they're turning on each other. They're actually turning into whistleblowers, not totally white hats, obviously, but they're turning into whistleblowers, and they're saying, wait a minute, there's something wrong with this. Why? Because they're changing their frequency, or they've recognized that they were being controlled and decided that they didn't want to be controlled, so now they have worked on switching it off, which means they're no longer listening to that, they're not tuned into that frequency anymore, they're not listening to that station.
Interesting. Thank you, Ron.
I mean, that road runs all ways. It doesn't run just one way. It runs both ways.
Absolutely. There's got to be advantages to having this thing here. And, yeah, like you're saying, it feels old and tired. And here's the thing. Here's the thing. All right. Back to another Doctor Who plot, which is the Silence. Spelled S-I-L-E-N-T-S. Like the things that are silent, right?
Right.
And they had big bulbous hairs, and they had really kind of scary faces, a bit like that kind of blobby Halloween-y face. Kind of cross between an E.T. and a ghoul, long bony fingers, and when you looked away, everything was normal again. It was just as if nothing had even happened. You know, it's a real Twilight Zone. It was brilliant the way they did it. And so these creatures, if you're not looking at them, and when you do turn round, you go back, oh yeah, I remember you. I remember this thing. How come I can't remember when I turn round and everything's back to normal again? You know? So it's a real, what they call a Twilight Zone moment. And what I found is every time I brought this creature up, every time I brought up Albert, we get distracted. And that's, Albert's probably the prime progenitor of the divide, rule, and distract brigade. It's a psychic thing, and they can do it psychically, and that's how they took over the human race.
Right.
Dun, dun, so, dun.
Now we have a couple comments in the chat box I want to respond to. It's about, wonder if he's the one who draws new souls into the incarnation cycle on this planet, and the other one says, what if he holds the trapped souls captive? I would love to clarify that, because the Elohim seen that and they want to respond to that. He doesn't actually draw the new souls. Remember, it's about a frequency. If they carry the frequency, not all new souls will have the frequency to respond to his signal. So that's number one, is that not all new souls will have that same frequency. They're not all, we're not all the same. We all, new souls that come here, aren't created to necessarily learn all the negative and then go into the positive. It's not always that way. So, I don't think that, you know, he traps all the new souls. Although I do think that that's how many go on over and over and over again, and they become more and more entrenched in it, is because that signal is a familiarity, and it's not one of those things that you're going to stop and think about and go, gosh, I wonder if I'm supposed to be responding to that frequency that's, you know, running through my body. Nobody usually has those kind of conscious thoughts. The next thing is, if he holds trapped souls captive, he doesn't actually trap them to where, he doesn't actually trap the souls, like in a limbo land, or that he is actually, just sending out the signals that they respond to. So in a sense, they're trapped. They're trapped by their own, listening or responding, because there's not enough conscious awareness there to go, where is that thought coming from? Why am I taking this action? There's not enough internal balance. That's people that run out of ego as opposed to a conscious awareness. And it takes us now another rabbit hole. So, so you could say that he traps them in as much as that they're unaware that they're following blindly to these unseen, unfelt signals that, that is, you know, runs through their body on occasion. Or all the time, as the case may be for some. So, again, we're putting human terms into something that's non-human and trying to make some sense out of it. So, you know, we have to look at the ones that have been captured, so to speak. Their souls, of their essence, their DNA have been responding repetitively through eons of time to this thing on this planet, those that incarnate and reincarnate on this planet. Sometimes these people have been here long enough and they're going, huh, I think I want to do something. They wake up one day and they go, I think I want to do something different, because just like this thing is sending out signals, so is other entities that do not have negative designs, are not using the humans for any other reason other than to be positive, to send them strength, to send them wisdom. We have to do the work. So some of them are now responding to a different frequency because they have been around long enough. They're going, well, wait a minute, I'm not sure I want to do this anymore. I don't know what I want to do, but I don't want to do this. So it allows for those other ones, those other frequencies to come in and to become more noticeable to them, which we think of as thoughts. Is that making sense?
Yeah. So when we're talking about Karen Hudis, we're talking about two things, because, you know, we're not alone. We, you know, when it rains, it pours. So, we not only do have to deal with this new discovered or newly uncovered, species of other being who, like, for many, many years, we've had the splinter in your mind. You know, the whole thing, the whole Morpheus thing. This is what it's about. Look at what Morpheus, the conversation that Agent Smith has with Morpheus. You know, they see humanity as a virus. You know what I mean? They see humanity as something that needs to be cleansed, washed off the face of the earth with disdain because of their such being able to walk around with skeletons and things. They're jealous of our spine, okay? They're jealous of skeletal systems because they're single-celled amoeboids. All right, so meanwhile, how they get to space travel, you know, maybe they discovered space on their planet and they folded space and time and they ended up under the Vatican in the toilet, you know. Oh, look, we've got a friend down here and, you know, I wonder what the first conversation was, you know. Oh, hello.
Yes.
You know, does Albert send the sign through the television? Probably. Is this through the TV? Hang on. What's
well, it? you know, the signals that are being sent through TV are through the, you know, it actually, let's take a look at, remember we talked about the schematics and the instructions and the information that, you know, has been fed. And some of those people took that. And there was a lot of clever beings, that have been on this planet. They've done really, really good things for humanity. I mean, look at Da Vinci himself. I mean, he was an extreme engineer. You know, had drawn mechanisms of things 300 to 500 years before they were actually ever produced. You know, where did that information come from? It certainly wasn't from someone like, you know, the blob, the beast, Albert. And yet anything that you build or create that is of a positive nature can also be turn toward the negative, and vice versa. We live on a planet of duality. I say that a lot, and will continue to say it. We have to understand the bigger picture here is that this is a planet of duality. It's extreme duality. Maybe it's not as extreme as it could get, but this is our kind of reality as it is in the moment, right? So when we're looking at that kind of a thing, we're looking at the positive and the negatives. Is TV a positive or is it a negative? It's a positive for some of the stuff that comes out of it. It is a negative for the other stuff. So it is it's got both in it as far as I can see. You know, it allows me, when I look at TV, it allows me, especially commercials, just love looking at commercials, because you can really sense what's going on in the background. If you don't actually watch the commercials, but you watch how they are actually created, right, in a sense of why they're bringing it to you. I mean, it really is very elementary programming that they're doing. You must go out and buy McDonald's. You must go out and have a Wendy's. You must go and see your doctor for this drug because you got this wrong with you and that wrong with you, whatever it is that they're selling, right? And hurry and do it now. I mean, over here in the United States, I don't know what it's like over there, but, you know, when it gets to be about 1, 2 o'clock in the morning, all the TV stations, most all of them, play infomercials, which that's all it is that a product that stays on the air, that they do a hour or two long of a commercial on some product that they want you to buy or that you need or that you have to have, right? So is the signal coming from TV from this guy?
Is the signal coming from this guy? Well, it's...
No, from the guy.
From this guy. Yeah. From Albert. Yeah.
Yeah. Into the TV? Well, I don't know that he doesn't use that, but, you know, he's more into the frequency thing. And,
it's,
you know,
TV
whatever
network.
works.
Yeah.
What's that?
It's the TV network. He's like an overlay on everything that goes through the cathode ray tube.
Yeah.
That's what it is. So the TV is the modulating, and the digital TV is even worse. And
they've
spoken about this kind of digital possession thing going on. Actually, Albert is a sort of AI, isn't he?
In a sense.
Maybe he's the machine that they're talking about, that is an organic living computer. Computered.
You know, I think we're giving him way more power than what he needs to have.
Mm-hmm.
Because with everything that has, even though he may be a controller, he too has a controller. Mm. He's not just doing this arbitrarily to do it. And again, get back to the earlier part of that. So that's the other thing, is that you don't want to give something more power than it deserves, because it will certainly take advantage of that.
Yeah. So rather than him being like a diplomat, he's more of the...
He's doing a job.
He's, administering the post where the country's product is delivered. I don't know what it's called. It's like a port where the energy is forwarded to the final point. He's the administrator to that. Make sure that happens and that, you know, that the deliveries run on time, you know.
Well, you know, he was given, you know, very specific information, right? Obviously, he was given a task or instructed or whatever. I mean, he just didn't show up here and say, well, I think I'll do this. I mean, that isn't what happened here, right? So obviously he sent, and I talked about this, I think, on Friday's show too. Mm. You know, he also sends signal back to wherever it is that is. And I'm going to go back to what I talked about on Friday night, which is one of the things that I was shown very, very specifically by the guides was how to tell if somebody that you know, you could be having a conversation about bread for all I care. It doesn't matter what the conversation is. It doesn't have to be anything deep, spiritual, metaphysical, esoteric, paranormal, nothing. It can be about the new pair of Nike shoes you bought. Doesn't matter. But you may be expressing some information to somebody that you know very well. It could be a mother, a father, a sister, brother, friend, neighbor, husband, wife, whatever the case may be, child, doesn't matter. And if you pay attention to their face while you're having this conversation, while you're talking, they're not. You're the one that's doing the talking. They seem to go into a slightly shutdown mode for just a moment. It's almost as if the computer says, okay, I'm at rest now, but I'm still taking your input. And you can actually see whatever it is that you're projecting outwards into this person through your conversation. It could be that you're angry at your boss. It could be that you're telling them about a fear that you might have, or that, you know, you've got an allergy to bread, or whatever the case may be. This person is this information is being downloaded into them and then immediately uploaded. So they're a receiver and a transmitter all at the same time. They're receiving you and they're transmitting. And what's the most unique thing about this is that they're getting information. It's like, because you're an open vessel to them at that point, and they can actually see what it is that they, whoever's receiving this, not the person you're talking to, but they can actually see what are some of your fears and what some of this is and what some of that. And all that's used to compile information about either you or about the human race in order to be able to, you know, continue with, I will call it, the control mechanisms.
So...
is that making sense?
So basically, you're talking almost exactly about the Agent Smith, that everybody around you, anybody, this is really, I mean, this is going to get everybody looking over their shoulders, this whole series of shows. It's like, are there any pills for paranoia? Anyway, really, I'm not selling these. You know, maybe I should. But anyway, you're saying that any moment, somebody that you know may be taken over by the artificial intelligence and download information about you. Now, something Sam Squatch just said, he said he's the power source for the machine construct on this planet, from what I'm hearing. So this is interesting. It's like we're all feeding. And also Justin Time saying Jabba the Hutt was the movie Star Wars warning us we would find a creature being like this in the future. Do you know who Jabba the Hutt is?
I do, and it resembles something like Jabba the Hutt. I watched the movie, and it's somewhat like that.
Yeah, but slightly...
Now, this vision, by the way, came before that movie came out, just so I'm clear, so you're all clear on that. But it does resemble Jabba the Hutt quite a bit.
Well, there you go, guys.
Not identical, but it does resemble it, in a sense.
Yeah, in the it's a kind of big bag of stuff with a
blob
face somewhere in
big
there.
Blobby.
Has it got a mouth?
You know, I think it does, but it doesn't actually use it in the same way, because again, it makes some kind of noise. I don't really know how to describe that noise.
Probably makes sound in a different way than the thing that it eats with. Unlike we have multiple function things. Mouths do all sorts of clever things, and you know, we're all kind of multiverse. Some creatures evolved before somebody thought, oh, we could combine. It's a bit like the mobile phone, you know, it does everything that your household items used to do, you know, telephone and torch and alarm clock and everything. So the human being's a higher technology being than this creature, which really, like, still sounds like a switchboard or a liquid mainframe, a gel computer, a really, really highly advanced artificial intelligence being. Organic.
It's organic.
Yeah.
It's an organic being.
Mm.
It's organic. That doesn't mean that it doesn't have technology within it. You know, there's so many things that we just don't understand what constitutes AI. And for us, it's a robotic thing with maybe some, you know, look, human skin over it or something, right? Mm. But is that really truly AI when you get into different dimensions or different galaxies or different universes? You know, what constitutes AI?
Pizza,
you know?
The Hut.
Yeah.
Pizza the Hut.
There you go.
Jabba
Pizza the Hut.
So, yeah, we're...
So I want to get back to the idea about the people that you're talking to. This is not about spreading paranoia to anyone. What this does is that if you notice it, that means that you need to taper down what you're exuding from yourself. This person has, the person that you're speaking with, has no knowledge nor no ulterior motive. They have no knowing that this is what is going on with them. You yourself may be doing the same thing without knowing it either. So what I want to share with people is that if you are going to have conversations with somebody, just make sure that you pay attention. And if you feel something strange, change the topic, drop the emotional aspect, shut your emotional self off, so that whatever, you'll break the transmission doing that. It's that simple. Truly is that simple. And that's easy to do.
Is there a body reaction you get when, like, the camera's switched on? I mean, really, what you're talking about, it's a bit like the NSA taking over your laptop and switching on your webcam and, you know, watching what you're doing and reading your keystrokes and stuff like that. It's a bit like they're kind of hijacked in that same way, but, and this
well,
is by...
it's momentary. Hmm. It's not, it doesn't last. I mean, it's like, it's just that moment, but they can go in and his stuff can get pulled from you. Obviously they can't take everything from you, but they can pull information. You know, what's more closely, related, and they're specifically searching for things like fear, negativity, you know, your own guilt or shame, you know, all the negative attributes that we all carry around, right? The other side of duality, right? They're looking for that so that they can play on that, because that gives them an insight as to how to keep programming stuff. You see?
Yep.
Make sense? So if we change what we're thinking about, if we change how we're expressing ourselves to somebody, and I don't mean that if you're having a lovely, wonderful conversation, then you're all of a sudden supposed to be mean and hateful to them. That's not it either, or vice versa. It means to pull it back and shut off the stream. And I think everyone can understand that.
Sometimes the stream is flowing very well, and it's very hard to shut the stream off. Gentlemen will understand that. Women are often better at shutting off the stream. But I mean, really, it's the same sort of pulling back energy that we're talking about. Yes, Iapetus, I think Tremjar has this kind of circle thing. Tremjar, Sanobim, he's got two personalities on the chat room, but he's saying that Star Wars was more of a history documentary than a sci-fi movie a long, long time ago, right here in the solar system. Where are they?
And I don't totally disagree with that statement.
Mm. So, you know, everybody wants a lightsaber, don't they? Or would you prefer a phaser? There's another one. Would you prefer a phaser or a lightsaber?
I'm a phaser gal.
It was what?
I'm a phaser gal.
Yeah, you'd go for, because it's just so much handier to have something that you can, like, set to stun or vaporize.
That's
just so cool, and you can do it from a bit of a distance, and, you know.
So I want to tell you a real quick story. Can I change the topic for just a moment?
We're going to change course in midair.
We are, just for a minute. Just for a minute. We're going to get back to it. You know, I think I was talking to you years ago about all the blue dreams I had. You know, those were all educational things in which I was taken into different places and shared a lot of different information, right? And they were all in kind of this blue hue. So now I'm getting what I call my virtual dreams, which everything is taking place on this planet, right? In the now time, the things that I recognize, understand, there's no blue, but I always have that same guide there with me. So the other night, he took me, I was standing outside and it was a clear night and the sky was clear, and there was a full moon, big yellow full moon. And so I'm standing out there with him, and I'm looking at him, and this is what I say to him all the time. I said, so what am I looking at? You know, what the hell am I doing here? And he says, well, what do you see? And I said, well, I see a full moon and the stars and blah, 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 you know. It's a beautiful night. He says, no, no, no. He said, that's a black moon. And I said, a what? I said, that moon isn't black. And then all of a sudden I looked up and this little, like, shadow went over the moon. I thought, okay. And so I said, so what's a black moon? And at that point, my lucid dream stopped and I went into a deep sleep and I don't remember it. So here's the freaky thing.
Okay. No.
wait. Here's the freaky thing. The freaky thing is the next morning, I get up and I'm reading one of my little news feeds that I read, and somebody is typing in there, and they've typed this little thing, says, so, tonight is the black moon. And I went, oh, what does that mean? And I was, you know, here I'd had that dream that night before, just a few hours before. So I'm reading this little article, and the article is about when there are two new moons in a month, which, by the way, is extremely rare, astrologically speaking, that it's called a black moon. I'd never heard that, ever. So there was something very significant about this black moon that we just had, this new moon, right? There was one of those in January where there were two new moons in January as well. A rare astrological event took place in January, and again in March. We're having April with two eclipses, and sandwiched in between that is a grand cross. So I want to tell you is that 2014 is one of those years that's really going to go down in history. I have no idea what's yet going to come up, but this conversation that we've been having for, you know, this is the second night now that we've had it, and there will be another one, I can tell you that, because we're still not down that rabbit hole completely. There's more to this on the peripheral of the beast and the construct and all of that. So all of these conversations that we're having are very significant to what's happening on this planet, right in the here and the right in the now.
That's right. So the first thing is, it really helps to breathe. If you do feel a fear coming up, or you start feeling paranoid, you start having thoughts. I mean, when you have that kind of rapid fire thought thing, it's often a sign that your blood is lacking oxygen. So breathe. Take some deep breaths. You know, the breath I was reminded of is you breathe down into your belly. So you push your belly out and then you expand your rib cage and then you raise your shoulders. So you breathe in three stages. And then you exhale the same way. So so it's like a kind of rippling that goes up your body and it lifts you up. So if you can figure that out, it's a very good way of breathing and getting oxygen into your brain, and you don't suffer from all this thinking stuff, and you get back to your heart center, which has a much better perspective on the whole thing, really. I've heard about the blue moon and the indigo moon, which is when you got two full moons in an astrological month. So when you got two new moons in an astrological month, that's what they call a black moon, and that's what we just had today. Dun, dun, dun.
So I had never heard that astrological term before. I'd
yeah, but when
moon.
Did you hear that?
Was in that my dream.
When?
Night before last.
Night before last. All right. So it really is, you know, it's really very current. So your dreams are saying, you know, not only is this relevant from what you learned before, but it's relevant right at this moment. And,
yes.
It was interesting because last night Eva said, you know, the moment she came on the show, she was really kind of firing on all six. And yeah, today, now is the time. Now is the signal.
Yes. And I really want everyone to take advantage of these extraordinary energies that are out there. Remember, this more than a conversation about energy, truly. That's what frequency is. It's the signals that come from this thing that we've been talking about, Albert, the beast, the blob, whatever, in the Vatican. And there's a lot more, by the way, that I saw down in the Vatican, and we'll have to talk about that some other time. But, you know, we really all need to be really more super conscious of not paranoid and not put it in your thought that, you know, I have to pay attention to every single thing I do. you can make this so that this just becomes a way of life for you and not a thought process that you have to think about, let me see, what am I supposed to do here? What am I supposed to do with that? If you simply practice it every day, it becomes a part of who you are. It becomes a natural thing that you do, whatever this thing is. And in another conversation we'll have to have is what they talked to me about, which was the mechanical beings. And those are not AI. Those are actually here on this planet. And they're mechanical in as much as that they are, some people would call it AI, but they're really a whole different classification. I don't even know how to explain it.
Do they have a soul?
No, they don't, actually. And not in the way that we understand them. They have a personality. What they are is actually, honestly, they're more like a clone.
Are they?
They're a cross between a clone and a doppelganger.
Hmm. So here's the thing, here you are. There's Rebecca, but you're ensouled. You're ensouled right. by a spirit, right? And
right.
Here is me, JP, and I ensoul this fellow here. And we're at the end of the show. So, we're just going to have to continue this on and on and on and on and on. I hope people
yes.
are finding this fascinating because this is really. This is part of the disclosure of
yes.
understanding what it is that has been in our environment, creating the Truman Show that is your life. Brothers and sisters, I'll see you next week, or maybe later on this week, if anybody wants me. All right. God bless you.
I do.
Bless your heart. I love you all tonight.
I love you too. Bye. Thank you, JP. Bye, everyone.